It's not complicated. Call it creative. Call it art. Call it design. It's the Design Coach on Lake 96.1.
It's Sunday, right? It's Sunday. Sunday?
Apparently,
I believe that that's the case.
It is. Apparently,
good morning,
we lose
everyone. Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Cesano. Oh my gosh, Nancy, what a week.
Yeah.
What a week. Yeah. I mean, I'm super excited because, of course, you know what happens in the summer? When spring happens, and as we move towards summer, the wardrobe needs to shift.
Transitions.
Away from my favorite plaids.
I know.
Right?
The flannels.
Especially my well curated collection of shackets, which as it gets north of 60, just. You just look sweaty and hot. And
right.
You can't.
It doesn't even look
they
right.
Just don't, yeah, it doesn't even
let
look
alone
right.
Feel
like
right.
I did have a, I even tried to pull off this week a cotton turtleneck. That was even a stretch. Although it was a little lighter weight, it was still a stretch.
Yeah.
It was cotton. I understand that. Still kind of a stretch. Because the problem is it's 36 in the morning and by the afternoon it's 66. Right.
Right. So, 78.
Yeah. You just
even.
Feel like you're living right. on a different planet.
Well, you know, it's all four seasons in one day.
However, I did, and I'm wearing it today. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have to share this, but I'm going to first share it on air. Okay, you know that often on the radio show, I share favorite products. Okay,
right.
I'm going to recap just a couple. Okay, number one, big fan of Taft boots. Okay,
yes.
Taft boots. They are not a sponsor of my show, neither on Lake 96.1 or Spotify, just so you know, but I'm a huge, huge lover of Taft boots. Get a lot of compliments on them. Really well made, decent price point. Great, great boots. Okay. I also now have found, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Quaker Marine Supply.
Okay.
Quaker Marine Supply. If you go on Instagram and you look them up, check them out. I have finally found a fun colors.
It is. Yeah.
Summer weight.
Oh.
Flannel. Okay.
Mm.
Summer weight cotton. So really thin.
Hmm.
Right. I was upset that I had to put away all my great plaids and all my great shackets. Now, these are not shackets. These are just actual shirts. But I'm digging them, right?
I love the pattern and I love the, you know, I give it a 10.
Very me,
except,
right?
Do they have short sleeved ones? Because even in the summer and even in a summer.
I know, but you've heard me rail on this before where if you have to rip the sleeves off of flannel, you've completely.
Well.
Like you're talking about the camp. Flannels.
I meant like a normal.
Yeah,
short
I believe
sleeve.
That they
I didn't
do.
Mean
I believe,
rip it off I, like a I believe, hillbilly.
I believe that they do. What I'm just loving is the weight of this.
Yeah,
like I'm loving the weight. I'm loving the colors.
It's super soft too.
Yeah, super soft. I am loving it. So, Quaker Marine Supply. Check it out. So that's my fashion tip for this morning. Other than the nod to Taft boots. Okay. Hey. It is really exciting. I'm kind of amped. I mean,
clearly.
What
else is new? But
what else is new?
Mm-hmm.
But a couple things I want to build upon a conversation that we had last week about this Hemingway Goes to Thailand.
Yes,
which was this really weavy. I'm gonna call it weavy river of a show that like it's just like water running down a hill. You know, it eventually got to the reservoir where it needed to rest, but it took a lot of paths and cut a lot of paths through the soil to get there.
Do you think that's unusual for the show?
I think I've been pretty disciplined. I think as of late, I think I've been pretty disciplined. Last week's show felt like a little bit of a meander, but I there was a lot to cover in this topic of. Basically, the upshot was, and if you guys go back to either Spotify or Lake96.1.com, if you go back and you want to listen to the archive show, it was basically just all about, you know, defining your own style and not being defined by, you know, any kind of trend and not being defined by any kind of influence that that really the design industry is an industry, right? Like trend for them is an industry. It kind of keeps the money machine moving. And as we found, you know, in the incessant 24-hour information infotainment.
Infotainment.
Yes. Industry, you know, that's been even more pushed to the forefront in things like color of the year and all of the trends to avoid or what's hot and what's not and all of those t- types of nonsensical conversations that are really, really designed to just keep you on some sort of weird hamster wheel, or as I call the trend treadmill, right, where you just keep plodding through in an effort to, you know, maybe keep you off balance and have you second guess your choices so that you just continue to purchase more. Total aside, I know that there's more to it than that, but that is sometimes how I feel. And I feel like a lot of people actually do feel that way. One of the things that I'm really encouraged by, Nancy, is a couple of things. I wanted to give some industry notes that I wanted to make you aware of that I wanted you to read on.
Okay.
Today's show topic
is this homework?
No, there's no homework.
Okay.
No, just really just your kind of like your general read and kind of how we think that's going to play. And, you know, I have mentioned on several shows to start the new year that I believed that we were in a renaissance in more ways than one. And maybe renaissance is maybe just my perspective. Maybe other people's perspective is more like, you know, it's basically a shaking up of the status quo. That is undeniable. It is at this juncture now. It's at this point, it's global.
Mm-hmm.
It is a global shakeup. You know, some good, some bad, I'm sure, depending on where you fall. But I think we know one thing. It will not. It's not going away. It's not going to end. And that it's going to be a little bit of an interesting road as we move through 2025.
It's gonna be exciting.
I think things settle down maybe next year. I don't think that that's what's going to happen in 2026. So what I really want you to focus on, at least on today's show, is I'm loving the fact that traditional and risk in color and pattern is absolutely now being pushed to the forefront. It's now beginning to dominate some of the conversation, if not a lot of the conversation. And it's interesting because traditional can mean a lot of things. It's gloriously not transitional, which in my world means gutless.
Right.
Like I couldn't pick. So I just went with something that's not quite modern and not quite traditional. It's just sort of like down the middle.
Right.
Or as my kids would say, mid. Okay. You know, it'd just be mid or meh or whatever that is. But I as I begin to explore this, I'm interested to see how this goes with one interesting note in the industry. And that is, since COVID, all of the offices in a lot of these major cities, they can't rent them because, you know, these big corporate complexes. I don't know if we're going to see that again.
Oh, I think a lot of them have already started to.
I mean, I think you're going to see people taking over existing buildings.
Sure.
But I don't know that you're going to see these new massive campuses.
Right. That's true. That's true.
I don't know. I mean, I think that'll be interesting to watch in architecture, is whether or not the massive campus is something people want to invest in if you have a lot of people working remotely,
mm-hmm. Right.
And still are and probably always will be, you know, as that technology begins to just increase our productivity.
Right.
Listen, my son works for a company that's got one of the best campuses out there. It's an amazing campus. It's almost as though he could live there. That's kind of what it's like. And I'm sure that's, you know, I think, again, bringing all of those amenities to the workplace is one of the ways companies are trying to get people to come back.
Right.
Is by creating, right, bar-like settings. They're offering restaurants and food. They're offering a lot of those hospitality amenities within the workplace mm-hmm. to get people to come back. I think that's something we're going to continue to watch because I do think that experience, you know, you want to feel like when you go to work, you know, that there's a familiarity there, that you're not just at the office, you know, that you can have some of the convenience of home in the office. I mean, is Lake 96.1 going to be putting in like a taco bar?
No.
Right? No. It's called DoorDash. It's called DoorDash here.
Yeah.
Right? You just sort of make that happen.
Yes, but you know me. I don't even like the chairs to be comfortable because my salespeople are not supposed to be sitting in chairs.
Oh my gosh, you heard it here first.
Right. They're supposed to be out
of
the office.
Yes, I'll take the one from the penitentiary collection. Oh, I know it's made out of concrete. I know it weighs 200 pounds. That's okay. They're not going to be sitting in it.
We have a ramp.
Is it comfortable? Oh, no, then I don't want that one. I want the other one. This is where Nancy's at today. But the other movement that I wanted to chat about that I was fascinated by was the conversion in a lot of major cities from office building to multifamily. And, you know, when you have a lot of these office spaces that are relatively contemporary in nature, right? I mean, as sort of is the office vibe, more clean lined, more streamlined. I'm interested to see, you know, how that plays into then the buyer's appetite for if traditional is coming back, how that plays with renovating on the developer side of things and office building into a multifamily development.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm curious to see where the inventiveness goes. And I think this is what I love the most. What I love the most is as housing and real estate, I mean, listen, that's a whole nother topic for another show, but where real estate's headed. I mean, right now, you know, you've got home sales are a little bit down. You've got a lot of uncertainty in the market. It's making people really nervous to maybe pull the trigger on sort of bigger expenditures, especially new home construction or very large home new construction. Right. I think what you're going to find is, you know, we're seeing a pivot now back to remodel. Putting the money back into the investment into the home, where you're going to purchase a home that really might not have everything you want, but you're going to try to turn it into something really cool and dreamy. You know, like I've said before, you might not be in your dream home, but you can certainly create dream rooms. I think we're going to see a continuation of that, maybe even an expansion of that, because I do feel like the appetite for renovation isn't going anywhere.
Sure, no.
Right, I mean, you're experiencing yeah. this right now.
Yeah,
in your Victorian that you're sort of transforming yeah. into. A lot of an amalgam of your passions, which I think is really great, which I'm sure on future shows we're going to talk about.
Right. But, you know, my style, though, is traditional.
So I'm wondering, like, would you ever, and maybe not you personally, but, you know, I do, there is a part of me that really loves the city. Like, yeah. I, even though I don't live in the city, mm-hmm. I live in something completely opposite
right.
of the city, right? In farm country. And listen, I love that. I love the big sky. I, you know, love the fresh air. I love the sounds of nature. Like, for all of the reasons that you would, you know, you could think of why living in the country is kind of a cool, fun thing.
Right.
Ever since COVID, I know that that's been this exodus from the city has been, you know, something that all states have experienced. But I do find that I do love going back to the energy of the city. I do love going back to the your head on a swivel.
But do you want to live there?
I think this is the question that I think I'm asking to start the yeah. show, right? Like, especially with the backdrop of today's show being this return to traditional. And I think, what are the resources and where that's heading? I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know is I do think that the transformative nature of the blank canvas of an office space, you know, you're not trying to undo something. It's almost like you're taking it all back to the studs and you can reinvent it any way you want.
Exactly. That's why blank canvas was what came into my mind. Like, yeah. why couldn't you make it into whatever you wanted? Think about an office. It's pretty bland.
Yeah, and I think you yeah. can. But I do see people wanting maybe to experience both of those settings. So I'll be interesting to see if it hits. Like, Is it gonna hit the way the developers? I mean, listen, they're probably getting some of these buildings for, right?
Like, sure,
a lot less than they right. would normally go for, and they're gonna try to reinvent them. Well, in order to do that, you've got to do that in areas where you've got restaurants. You have to do that in areas that you've got, you know, because the advantage to living in the city is you walk out your door, you have stuff that's right there.
Right.
I mean, you have to go to the city and then still get in your car to go places. That's problematic. You can do that almost anywhere. There's a name for that. It's called suburb, right? But like. If you, it'll be interesting to see where that falls. When we come back from the break, I want to explore this topic of traditional's comeback, where it's going to go, what are the resources, and more importantly for your home, what are the ways to begin to try that on if you're not into traditional now? Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. Thank you all for also listening on Spotify. For those of you who are joining us, I am really excited to unpack this topic of traditional. And what does it mean? You know, how does it manifest itself in materials? You know, what does it mean that the design industry is actually maybe, like, it's being pushed forward by so many popular designers? It's interesting to see the manufacturers lag behind. I think one of the things that I'm a little bit disappointed in, yes, you in the back, you were raising your hand.
But don't the manufacturers like to drive the bus, and that's why they're behind, because they're not driving the bus on this traditional trend?
You know, that's a really good perspective. I can't say that all of them do. I can say that there has been a real shift towards the contemporary mm-hmm. and clean line. The term I'm going to use is coastal, but you got to be careful when you use that term. There's Floridian coastal. There's California coastal. Texas coastal. They have water there on the Gulf.
Right.
And New England coastal is very different understanding of coastal. So
it's not all like starfish and seahorses?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that it can't have elements of that, but
what about Wisconsin coastal?
What I can say is that the Miami vibe and the California vibe, the Miami vibe and the California vibe are not necessarily the Maine vibe.
Right.
And Maine, like
why.
The state, like the Rhode Island vibe. Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, they're not exactly the same regional aesthetic and appreciation of the regional history,
right?
Or the history of the region. So when I talk about traditional, we have to talk about what that means.
Lighthouses.
Okay. You know, would you stop with the get off? Okay, so I'm sorry for everyone listening. Nancy's on a complete tangent here. She's down a coastal rabbit hole. But when we talk about this unpacking traditional, the reason I referenced last week's show, Hemingway Goes to Thailand, was because it was such an anomaly and a diversion, a very personal and intentional design statement, because they just didn't want what was the pervasive Floridian design at the time, back in 2017,
right,
when they originally did that look. And all it did was make the case, as I referenced on the show, when I went to go back to elevate parts of that design or add to the design in the form of the wine cellar. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, just go to our Instagram. You can see it. You know, when we advanced it, we were able to stay true to the original intent, elevate it with new material, as we will be for what we're calling the refresh in that same project.
Mm-hmm.
But you were able to stay true to the original design intent, right? Which means if it was personal, if it captured the spirit of the client, then it never goes out of style.
Right.
Okay, and that's one of the things I think is really important for us to talk about when it comes to traditional design. Traditional design, everybody makes what I'm going to call a style face, okay? Everybody makes it.
Okay.
Because you come to every design discussion with your bias and your understanding of what you think that design style is represents.
Sure.
Right. You know, if you don't like traditional and you love mid-century modern, and I say to you, I think you need some elements of, you know, decorative and more ornate, right? You might make traditional face. Like, because you think that there are what I would call in design, you think there are style rules.
Ah.
I'm here to tell you that there's no such thing as a style rule.
That's brainwashing.
There are there are rules of design. There are elements of design. There are principles of design. Scale, color, pattern and color in the right percentage. Mix of materials that work or don't work, or that seem connected or disconnected. But a style rule book that does not exist. And anybody who's telling you that there needs to be a style rule book loves the rule book.
Right.
Because it makes either their job or their understanding of their aesthetic easier. They just want paint by number.
Right.
Now, in there lies my entire disdain for design labels.
Well, yeah.
And you know this. I mean, we've been doing this show now north of 10 years, right?
Right.
And you've heard me say at every turn, the only style that really matters is the one you can call your own. And the definition of that, I find that most people are a little bit of everything, especially within a home. So when we begin to apply these really, really harsh, rigid labels, right?
Right.
Which the industry seems to still really love.
Right.
Okay. When you mention manufacturers like you did, one of the things that I want to point out is these manufacturers are trying to be both forward-looking and innovative in their designs,
mm-hmm.
which is why they hire designers to come up with lines. They come up with lines within their portfolio of offerings that maybe are more edgy, right?
Sure.
And then maybe they have a designer that's more traditional. I would say the lines that do that are definitely the ones that have a little bit more staying power.
Oh, of course.
You know, they understand that their line has to maybe appeal to multiple style references mm-hmm. and influences.
Makes total sense.
I go back to Ralph Lauren because that he has particularly branded a style of traditional that can elevate into contemporary in sort of a VIP New York penthouse vibe, sure. let's just say, for instance, or even a deco vibe. And having an understanding as a design professional the way that I do, where I like to design in multiple styles, because I appreciate it all, I've also learned to mix it all. And that's where you come up with these styles like Hemingway Goes to Thailand and why people are like, what are you talking about? Well, just go back and listen to last mm-hmm. week's show and you'll find
and
out.
And look at the picture.
And look at the pictures and you'll
understand. Because you're right. That was the perfect description.
It was traveled. It yeah. was different. It was saturated. It was jungle meets upscale. Like right. it was like, you know, there's a little bit of that found object, you know, like that rustic meets refined in that entire design. Yeah. And it just so happens that that was an accurate reflection of the client's taste and their personal journey, which is what made it special. And in a way, everybody listening today, isn't that what you want your homes to be? This really amazing, special expression of how you're unique and your individual journey, which is why I can't stand the labels and the adherence to them. Because when you do that, you depersonalize your design. It's really depressing, everybody. It's really sad when you give in to page 42 and then the coordinating pillow on page 43 in some like colorless expression because you wanted to play it safe. What it means is that you didn't really do the homework to figure out you. Now, I expect that when you're trying to put your design together with you when you're younger.
Sure.
You haven't experienced a lot. Your story is still relatively untold.
Right.
And you got a lot of years ahead of you.
Don't necessarily have a lot of money.
And you're trying to piece right. it together with what right. you got. And I give it a lot of pass, with the exception of I really want you to buy artwork younger. I want you to go to art shows and invest in art that you love because art travels. Mm-hmm. And that if you love a piece and you connect with a piece of art, the same way that when you connect with a piece of music or a book, it stays with you. In a way that a sofa never will.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Like artwork will, and sofas are harder to move.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah.
Than a painting. Which is why, you know, one of the things that I would encourage as you're beginning to sort of explore your design when you're younger is portable design. Like, what can you take with you that you still love? I think that's a really important cue. And in when you say buy artwork, it doesn't have to cost you a lot of money. You can go to these art shows and you can find artists that are just really just trying to make a statement. And if you fall in love with something, buy it. And don't worry about where you're going to put it. If it's something that you love, you will find a place for it. And Julie and I have done that. There were years we had no business buying art.
Right.
But we would travel somewhere. We would find something. We stretched to maybe afford it. It wasn't a deal breaker.
Right,
it wasn't
right.
Like, you know, I'm not out there buying Picassos. You know what I mean? I'm not at auction raising paddles, people. I'm going to
not at Christmas.
You know, we're going to like, you know, we're traveling and we're seeing local artists and we're supporting the local art scene by connecting with pieces that we know mean something to us and that the artist was willing to put out there to share, which I think is a really cool moment. I think there isn't really a better moment than when you see a piece of artwork that you connect with from a total stranger.
Well, and you keep
someone
looking
who you've
at
never
it.
Met, right?
Right. And what tells you is you keep looking at it. And maybe you even look away or walk away, but you just keep coming back to it. Those are the things. You're gravitating toward that for some reason.
Yeah, you have to think of artwork. Why. You have to think of artwork as your music album.
Yeah.
It's sort of like your music collection. It should stick with you. Now, I'm, some of the best art you're ever going to own is on your phone. Right. Yeah. I mean, we've talked your about kids. All of the editing tools right. that make that possible. But as I talk about your personal design, one of the things that I want to talk about as we unpack the notion of traditional and where that's how to apply that. What does that mean? I want to start with some basics. I think it's really important for us to unpack and I would say really deconstruct the design styles to understand where some of the crossovers are. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you an example of one of them. And it's not going to be traditional. Art Deco and the really, if you envision the Empire State Building and you envision the curved lines and you envision the speakeasies of the 1930s, 20s and 30s.
Right.
There's a clean line ornateness where that style tends to marry the contemporary and the ornate.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so therefore, if you have a clean line aesthetic, Art Deco isn't a bad decorative nod to something more traditional in the right percentage. What I have found is that as we begin to sort of unpack the nature of these labels, that when you're too rigid in your personal construct or bias, that's where it gets in the way of your creativity. That's one of the things on the Design Coach, not just on the show, but in practice with our firm, is something we're really dedicated to, is sort of unwiring people.
Oh, yeah.
And that's painful at times. Now, I just happen to have the candor and the coaching ability to get them through it, but I have to unwire all of the bad habits, some of the bad decisions, sometimes a lot of the bad purchases, the wasted time, energy, effort, and money, right? And the really jumbled understanding that they don't understand what their design style is, but they do know this, and this is where it all begins. It's super simple. What do you like? Oh, let's just say, for instance, that you have, well, you have to eat every day. We all do. And let's just say that your design style was, well, an avenue of cuisine.
Okay.
Are you only supposed to eat Italian food every day at every meal?
No.
Then why would your design be the same? Why? Why? Because there's too many other cuisines out there to enjoy.
Right.
There's too many other cooking, experimental cooking and dishes from multiple cultures to be explored.
This is what food courts are for. You go get French fries over here. You go get pizza over
there. And the segue
there.
Apparently
Chinese
into segment three is, welcome to the Design Coach Radio Show. We're going to show you how to open up a food court in your house.
Right, a buffet.
Of design styles. But I do like where that's going. When we come back from the break, we're going to unpack the notion of traditional, why it's coming back, and how to apply it in your home. Stay with us. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. It is truer words have never been spoken when you say it's a miracle that we get this show completed.
Oh, well, yeah. Any show in this office because,
I love it. Oh, I love being here. Anyway, I love being here. I love talking to all of you. So thank you, everyone. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with
brought
your host,
to you by
Philip Sassano. Brought to you by Laser Electric and Supply.
Yes.
Love those guys. Love it.
Yeah. Well, you want to, the subject today is
steered the show at the end of segment two. You steered the show into I started us down the road, but you steered us into the cuisine analogy, right? Which I think is actually a really good one because everyone can relate it to food.
Yeah.
You can also relate it to music too because I believe people have a lot of diverse musical tastes.
This is true.
I also think people have a lot of interesting movie tastes. You know, you can have a favorite, like, oh, I really love thrillers, but I like a good drama. Or who doesn't love a good comedy? All of those are art forms, and so is your interior. So is interior design.
Yeah.
I have said it, and I'm going to say it. If I have to say it every show before it gets into your skulls, it's the ultimate performance art. Your home is a reflection of the influences of your life, functionally and creatively and visually. Okay? And so if you don't think that it is, and you also want to elevate it, that's on you. That's on you to define it, structure it, plan it, search for it, afford it.
Curate it.
And curate it. Right?
Yeah.
And so as we talk about this love of multiple cuisines, design styles should be the same. You know, the world of design and decoration and art is way too interesting to be defined by one style. Even traditional, because even that label has lots of layers, whereas some of the other layers seem like they have more rules. Mm. It seems like contemporary has a lot of rules.
Really?
Yeah, because it's like it's got to be clean lined. It can't be too ornate.
Right.
All you have is materials choices. Like you're relying on the materials choices and texture. Okay, and color to carry it all, but you don't have ornamentation.
True.
And ornamentation is detail. I think it's interesting that we're finding in some of the contemporary interiors, we're starting to see the metal inlays, the metal shelving standoffs that like on top of stone, you're starting to get people to start to fabricate in contemporary spaces with more ornate carvings of marble in the form of backsplashes, in the form of edge profile, edge details. It's making a comeback. Why? Because people are tired of really sterile contemporary interiors and a minimalist approach, Joshua Becker, that people are sort of looking at that and saying, that's not
boring.
That's not
enough.
And then also the whatever this 25-year malaise was of grayish.
Oh yes,
right.
Mm-hmm.
It is now. We're looking at that when we're saying, "What? Gosh,
how generic!
It would be like having a garden, and planting the same color of flowers in the garden. What is the point of that? Like, the whole point of an English garden or natural garden is to let all of the color explosions bloom throughout the year. The best gardens are a celebration of the timing of different plantings to celebrate the season, and somewhat curated, but somewhat unruly.
Right.
You know, when it becomes too curated, the landscaping feels contrived. You know, but if it's just if it's not curated at all, it just feels like
a jungle.
It just feels like a jungle.
Right.
In there lies the editing. In there lies the curation. Right. In there lies the design. Okay? So as we unpack traditional and what it means, I want to talk specifically about materials. Okay? The first notion of wanting to bring in materials that are inherently of interest starts with a passion of mine that I've been talking about for years, not only in service to my clients, but also in service to this show. And that's found objects. That is antiques. You know, I find that having an appreciation for the well-placed element that is either vintage or antique, and also can be personal. It can be the hand-me-down. It can be the heirloom piece that was handed down that you just don't know what to do with. It was always sad to me to find, I mean, I'm going to inherit something that doesn't even come from my family. I mean, it does through marriage, but it doesn't through blood. You know, my in-laws own a really awesome 1950s stove.
Oh.
That still works. I'm having it brought to the vault. Because I want it to live in perpetuity. Like, I want people to see that. And, my building is vintage. The building is, you know, of the 1950s, 60s era. And
what color is it?
Like, white with some blue. What?
And
oh, my gosh. Are you going to buy it off me? I can't sell it.
I'm not going to buy it off of you. I'm going to go
buy it
off of them.
But it's a vintage stove. And what I'm saying is, like, think about how cumbersome that would be. Like, oh, my gosh.
The stories.
Like, but think about, like, what am I going to do with this stove? Like, it would be like what people would say. And I hear that a lot. I hear from my clients that have cool things. None of my kids want that because their look is too clean. At that stage, if you're asking them when they're in their mid-30s, I would probably venture to say that their style elasticity has not been tested yet. The kids are having a role in that if they have any.
Right.
Right. They're learning to stretch.
Right.
For lots of things. Life, parenting, all the things that come from a growing family.
Yeah, they don't really have
and a growing life, right? This is where the rigidity, I think, is really a creative problem. Because I think if you're to create really personal spaces, really special spaces, your appreciation for creativity and in all of its forms needs to be at a heightened level. And if you can't bring that appreciation, but you want that, you have to hire somebody who does. That's kind of where we come in.
Right.
Right. You know, we're going to introduce our clients to things they would have never thought that they could pull off. In fact, that's really the fun, is to begin to raise their level of not just what they think is possible functionally, through, you know, really good sound design principles, but also visually what they think they can pull off. Okay? That's where it gets exciting, is to see the confidence grow. And when you have a design style that's too rigid, you never really stretch from that. You stay in the pocket. I don't know if you can totally grow.
And you miss opportunities to find those pieces because you're not looking for. I mean, it's not that you need to look for them, but you don't have an open mind to see them.
Yeah, and listen, this is just my perspective. I'm not saying that the really beautifully designed contemporary space doesn't have legs. I'm just saying at some point there's missed opportunities visually and creatively. And sometimes that can be made up with artwork, write really interesting artwork. And I understand that and appreciate that. It can be made up with really great craftsmanship and really on point, really difficult fabrication techniques. I'm not saying that it can't, but at some point, the world offers you more, and especially the interior design universe offers you more. And if you're too rigid in the construct of your style, you're always saying, well, that won't work.
Right.
And that's where I feel a lot of this conversation lies, is a lot of people are like, well, that won't work. Just like the piece I'm going to inherit from my mom, that won't work. How do you know?
Sure.
I'm going to give you one of the most simple ways that I see the transformation of pieces and to how to get over the hump. It'll be like a small sofa ercher.
Mm-hmm.
Or even the curio, God forbid. Like, let's just take a really out there. Like, who uses curios, right?
Curio cabinets?
Yeah, like, especially the ones that are, like, in a corner, like, all that stuff. Yeah, I know you do, but you live in a Victorian, and that's okay. In your wheelhouse.
Well, yeah.
What I'm saying
is
a lot of times these are stained in darker colors, or they're stained material that just doesn't fit. So you're looking, so what'll happen is the daughter, the daughter-in-law, the son-in-law, the son will look at it and be like, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work in our scheme. I don't know really where I'd put it. Rather than recognizing that it's very special to the parent and saying, how can I possibly reinvent it?
Right.
See, this is what happens with found objects and antiques all the time. People, I think, inherently fall in love with these things because they have an inherent sense of history and they're interesting. And then they find a way to talk themselves out of it. When I was at Round Top, Texas, the antique market back in the fall, I had referenced, I don't know, a few shows right after that about how they were taking these Italian antiques. Remember,
yes.
I was telling you they were bleaching them out?
Yes.
I bought a bunch because I liked the way that the really beautiful French and Italian oak or even cherry, how it bleached out.
Right.
And how in the crevices were some of the old stain to bring out the ornamentation. And I can absolutely see these beautiful European antiques playing in a more contemporary, I would say, a space that has a little bit more of a contemporary nod.
Sure.
To give it inherent charm. See, this is what's coming back. What's coming back is, how do I make room for that special piece where I have an appreciation in the right percentage? You have to think about how you can reinvent a piece.
The other thing is that they have made products that make it so easy to make a change to some of these things, paints and stains and you know, every tool that you need, you can do this yourself as well. So you don't pass on.
Yeah, as long as the curio is not made of veneer,
right,
and it's like made of plastic,
right,
like that, you have a shot at this. Like,
right,
all it takes is a sander,
yeah,
to expose it back. Yeah, expose it back to the natural wood, and you can replace the mirrors in the background with wallpaper panels or something different.
But don't cheat yourself out of something.
Yeah, I think that's really what I'm trying to, that's really what I'm trying to say is, don't cheat yourself off of the great appetizer that might be coming your way on the menu in design, because you're like, no, I only do Chinese food, or I only do Italian. It'd be the same thing. Like, why would you just want to live there only?
Right. In the food court?
No. Like, don't live there. Don't live in your box. And what I would call the creative prison that you've created for yourself. I see this all the time. And all I do as a design professional is, I actually, with many of my clients, I just show them a key. And I open the door to the jail. And I say, you can get out of your creative cell.
Yeah.
And come out. You're free. You're free to think about how to use these materials. What I'm really going to drill down on with the remainder of the show is how I do that.
Like, that's a good lesson.
How do you do that? Like, first, I wanted to start with the found object elements, because inherently a lot of people have a part of their personal history, whether it's artwork or antiques or furniture, that they need to be a little bit more open to finding a home for, because it's part of your personal history. Inherently, that makes it unique. Okay.
Right.
Now, sometimes if you don't have that, I will bring in found objects because the person maybe lived in France for a while, and we'll bring in doors that will go to a mudroom. Like in Hemingway Goes to Thailand, we actually brought in relics from that area, from that region of the world, to help us pull off this Floridian Hemingway Goes to Thailand look.
Right.
Okay. Sometimes you have to go find it. Sometimes you have to reinvent it. Sometimes you have to make it custom. All of those things should be on the table, but none of it should be done in this really weird creative box we put ourselves in as we grow older and we think we're developing a style. I think what happens is we're so influenced by so many things that we adopt masks. When we come back from the break, what I really want to talk about is how you set the mask aside and how you realize that the buffet of design is so incredibly, it's an incredible, cornucopia, for lack of a better word. It is just an absolute, like, wonderful explosion of
endless
ideas.
Yeah.
And why are you limiting yourself
yeah.
by defining a style that is a style that keeps you in a creative box? Anyway, stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. This is actually, I love this topic today, Daisy.
Well, as much as I love my shirt.
anyway, welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And thank you for everybody for listening on Spotify and to our local sponsor, Laser Electric and Supply.
I mean, you're talking about going out on a limb or not going out on a limb and things. Laser Electric, by the way, the lighting, they're a lighting gallery.
Mm-hmm.
You have talked so many times on the show about how lighting can just make a huge difference. And
oh, it's functional art.
Always, right. And they have it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they carry a ton of vendors. And I'm going to tell you, when you're looking to expand your design style, like what we're talking about mm-hmm. on today's show, one of the key things is not going back to the same resources over and over again.
Right.
Okay, you got to stop going catalog. And here's what I'm going to tell you. When you go big box, and when you go catalog, and when you go popular, they're interested in selling waves of design in volume. Because for them, if it's a really niche offering, it might not sell, it might not hit.
Right.
And that's too risky. Okay? That's why the artisan community that exists within the design world is so exciting. On the fabric side, on the furniture side, it's so exciting to sort of see these people, especially as it relates to sort of, you know, the explosion of Etsy and the explosion of some of these other platforms where these artisans can kind of get Instagram, can get their products out there in ways that they never could before.
Right.
You know, you'd have to travel to their general location. They'd have to find a retail location or an outlet. Like it was impossible. But now you've never had more resources and exciting resources in multiple styles at your fingertips. So what are you doing? I think as we talk about unpacking the notion of traditional, found objects is where we started, antiques is where we started, but it also comes down to pattern. Okay? You know, you asked we were at break about, like, you know, what do you call that? Like, are they just going out on a limb? Like, what is it? It's really that we've been conditioned to be risk adverse. To play it safe.
Yeah, it's intimidating.
Well, and part of that's parental.
Well, true.
Okay, part of that's our parents keeping us safe.
Mm-hmm.
And helicopter mom and dads are a thing. And we've all talked about how soft, okay?
Right.
You know, like, and I'm not gonna name generations because I'm not gonna paint that big a broad brush. That's not fair. It's not fair, but we do. Well, you know who you are. You know, if you're risk adverse, you know who you are. But there's a little bit of that in everyone. And I think the training as a professional artist that coming right out of college was every blank canvas was the opportunity to make a new statement.
Right.
And that statement didn't look the same. It would be like a painter painting the same painting over and over and over again. A singer-songwriter singing the same song with the same cadence over and over and over again. Why would you do that with your design? And especially, why would you do it in every room when every room can be an experience? I'm not saying that in your common area, you have to bail on your main aesthetic and your open floor plan that you locked yourself into because you needed the open floor plan. And now we're realizing that that was a mistake. You know, I love it that we're rediscovering rooms. Like,
right,
like,
yeah.
Like,
what?
Trends turn people into experts they have no business being.
Martha Stewart even said that the open concept is out.
Well, it was just one of those things where it was like almost like a real estate ploy to make people think they were getting bigger.
Right.
You saw this big open room, and then you realize during COVID, it's like, oh my gosh, put up a wall.
Go to your room. Oh, you can't.
I can't. I'm in the only room that exists. Right? And it made it very difficult to explore design styles because a lot of these rooms were so adjacent that visually you couldn't pivot.
Right. Like three-ring circus if you did that.
You couldn't explore. Well, here's where we begin to unpack traditional from this perspective. There are so many patterns and so many colors, and I'm gonna tell you where to go first. I want you to go to some of these UK designers, Clark and Clark. I want you to go to some of these JP and J. Baker. Okay. I don't know if they're necessarily European, but they're European inspired. Some of these other brands of UK fabric designers. And in fact, one of the original ones was called Romo Fabrics. Mm-hmm. They basically took very traditional patterns from the UK. Now, listen, if you're thinking traditional, does it get any more traditional than England?
No.
Right?
No, but we're also not talking about like Gothic England.
No,
either.
But what they did was is like, they took very traditional patterns and gave you new ways to think about it from a color twist. They took damasks and they completely reinvented visually what people's understanding of a damask was.
Right.
Okay. They reinvented plaids in really cool colors. Colors that were not used, that were not Irish or Scottish.
Right.
You don't understand what I'm saying? Like, they reinvented the notion of how plaid could be colorful in ways that were still traditional, but current or new.
Right.
That's what you're searching for. What you're searching for in your exploration of traditional is your version of it. It's your version of it. And for a lot of people, that's where the vintage comes in. You know, it's interesting to see people's understanding of like how they can mix contemporary and industrial.
Right.
You've heard of steampunk.
Yeah.
Right. Which is industrial and deco and like ornate.
Right.
Right. Scientific.
Even. Right. But that looks awesome together.
Well, and it's cool. Now, would you want to live in it? Maybe.
Not. But in every room.
But you might, you're catching on, Nancy. Yeah. Your home creates the opportunity for you to explore all of these different styles. I would call it the style flex. That for you to stay on the trend treadmill of what you think is popular is just easy. And easy is the enemy of creativity.
Dare I say... lazy.
It's very lazy. It's very lazy. Mm-hmm. It looks good. It looks good for a while.
For a minute.
It's not personal, which means it doesn't have legs. And then you wonder why your space doesn't feel A, like you, or B, really finished. And I have seen clients get into their mid-50s and do a complete style deviation. And say, I can't do that again. I live in that. And we were really rigid in our style construct. So in this home, I want to do this.
Right.
I want to explore this. And what's interesting, as a design professional, my job when I unlock them from their cell of their bias and their creative box that they've created for themselves, when I open that up, it's almost like it is literally like Wizard of Oz. Your style construct keeps you in a black and white understanding of what you can and cannot do and achieve visually and functionally, more visually than functionally, but it keeps you in a black and white. And then all of a sudden, what we do at the Design Coach is we open up a world of color. And what we do is we show you styles and patterns that are contemporary in colors you might never have explored. Or we'll show you traditional that you may have done before in new variations. That's why when we go exploring, we need all of it. Because everyone's percentage and calculus of contemporary, transitional, and traditional is different. That's really the stretch and the point of today's show is don't be so rigid that you're closing off yourself to opportunities where you're not even trying to be creative enough to make something special work or something interesting work. That's where you just get tired of it. You get lazy of it. And that's why you pick like mohair in gray. I love it when it's like, yeah, but this is a boucle. And you're like, okay, so it's just textural gray. Like, and the reps who come in want me to get like all excited about like, this is our latest mohair. Cost effective. Looks like, yeah, but it's still like, just a basic solid fabric that's
boring.
Got a basic texture.
Right.
Right. And I don't care if I can wipe peanut butter on it. It's still gray. And it's patternless. Like, I can't get excited about that. Like, give me, that's why I tell, you know, our reps, and they love to do, they love to, because the rest of the world works very style specifically, as do a lot of designers. They show me what they think our style is. And the problem is that we're none of any of those things. We're all of it.
Right.
That's the difference with the design coach way.
Right.
Is that we're all of it, so you can be what you want, not what we see and what we want you to be.
Not but that has to be so refreshing for them.
It is, and I will tell because you, it's hitting.
Yeah.
It's hitting, it's resonating. I can tell you right now on the radio, right now, it's resonating with some of you out there, where you know you're in a style box, and you know you're stuck, and you want to introduce something interesting, and then you do something really crazy. You go ask your friend or your mother-in-law or your husband or your wife, and you ask them for permission to be creative. Rather than say, hey, I think this could be interesting, and then trying to work and solve the problem to get it to fit. That's design. Design is making it all fit, no matter how complex the puzzle pieces. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have a job. I have a job because I fit really complex puzzle pieces together, even to the point where I have to fight through architects and I got to fight through builders. I got to fight through the client to a certain extent, or not so much fight through the client, but fight through the client's current construct to say, don't you want like something that's totally you, but that you would have never chosen?
Right. Like, if you're going to do it.
I think that's one of the things I love about cocktails is I love, like, I'll look at some of these really complex cocktail combinations and even I will be like, ooh, I don't know how that's going to taste, but clearly somebody feels strongly enough to put it on a menu.
Right.
Okay, which, you know what I mean? Like, they put,
right.
So I'm gonna give it a try instead of like, I'll have the Corona Light. Lime, please. I'll have the Jack and Coke. I'll have the tequila with soda. Like, I get it. You want to drink clean. I get that. But that's why vodka is a mixologist's like, meh.
Right.
Vodka needs, in its best day, it's tasteless and clear. Odorless and tasteless. Vodka needs help like potatoes. Like,
right.
Potato on its own needs a lot of help. It needs sour cream, needs cheese, needs butter, needs salt, needs pepper, needs a lot of things.
Right.
Potatoes need a lot of things. You can't just eat raw potato.
No.
Or regular potato.
I mean, you shouldn't.
Right? And whenever you're drinking something straight, other than maybe bourbon, maybe other than whiskey, okay, maybe other than maybe some gins, right? Because they've baked in some interesting element to it. I think that your design needs to be the same. I think your approach needs to be the same. You can have your favorites, everybody. You can have just your comfortable favorites. But you can't let your favorites dominate or limit your exploration of the exciting and the new and the personal.
Limits the word.
Can't let it limit.
Nope.
Can't let it limit. Okay? World's too cool. Lot of art out there, lot of interesting elements to include. Anyway, thank you for everybody listening on Spotify. You've been listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Have a great Sunday, everybody. You've been coached.